When was Jesus born? When did he die and rise from the grave? And what does the timing of these events have to do with Christian theology and practice for the last 2,000 years? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December is titled, When Was Jesus Really Born? It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or you can check out When Was Jesus Really Born at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, When Was Jesus Really Born?
Cody and I met. I guess I was just young and in love. He and I both knew that we would take another wife or wives into the family.
I just fell in love, and then I fell in love again, and then I fell in love again.
This is Cody's 13th child.
She's a sister from the same mister, and he's a brother from another mother.
Some people think, how do you feel when he's off with another woman and you know they're having sex? Well, gosh darn it, they better.
I think we're normal, and I go out and I'm like, oh yeah, I can't tell everybody about my normal family.
If you're good with one marriage, they figure you'll be good with two. I hope they think I'll be good with four.
With Robin coming along, it just changes everything.
If it happens, she just has to be absolutely amazing.
I knew it would be complicated, but I didn't know it would break my heart.
The wives, they work together as a team, and I want to be a part of that team.
Well, it's a trailer from Sister Wives, a popular show on television now about a man who, I don't know, is he living the dream? Or is he biting off more than he can chew? He's a polygamist, and he does it for religious reasons. And now he's not only in the news because of the show, he's in the news because of a lawsuit. And it seems as though things are kind of going his way. The Salt Lake City Tribune has a headline, Federal Judge Declares Utah Polygamy Law Unconstitutional. We're going to talk about striking down part of Utah's polygamy law by a federal judge. Dr. Jennifer Oback Morse here in the first few minutes of Issues Etc. Live this Monday, December the 16th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Thanks for tuning us in. A little bit later, Pastor Tom Baker will join us. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson today in Luke chapter 2. Well, it's appropriate coming upon the Christmas celebration, the birth of Jesus. That's what we'll be talking about. And then in hour two of Issues Etc., we're going to talk about Daniel, the prophet, and the three young men remembered on the 17th of December. And Dr. Andrew Steinman, author of the Concordia Commentary on Daniel, will be our guest. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Dr. Jennifer Oback Morse is a regular guest. She's founding president of the Ruth Institute, based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Were the seeds that are sprouting here with this decision in Utah, this federal judge decision in Utah about polygamy, were the seeds that are sprouting here planted long before the gay marriage agenda started to try and redefine marriage?
Well, it's hard to say, Todd. They actually cite the Lawrence versus Texas ruling as a source for why polygamous cohabitation shouldn't be criminalized or legalized or whatever the exact legality of it is in that particular case. So they're obviously related phenomena, but as far as the seeds to this whole movement, you know, this is another step in the sexual revolution, which says that there is no institutional marriage structure. There's only what adults want. And the business of the law is to give adults what they want at the lowest possible cost and in the most convenient way. And any social fallout, any fallout to children, anything that might affect anybody other than those particular individuals involved, we're just not even going to look at that. We're not even going to consider that. So that way of looking at marriage, you know, people have been doing that for, you know, probably about 50 years, I suppose, that trend has gotten started. But this one really makes it clear that the business of the law is to accommodate adults and what they want, and the larger social picture of what marriage means in the society we're just not going to take responsibility for that at all, according to this ruling.
To me, it looks like kind of application, and I'm not saying the judge in this case has this kind of reasoning going on, but it seems to me kind of the logical application of the libertarian mindset, which is the state really has nothing to say about any kind of relationship I may establish in my life. That's my business, not the state's business, and has no true interest in it whatsoever, should just keep their hands off. What do you think?
But see, if that's the case, yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you that it's a libertarian way of thinking about it. But really, it's a kind of lazy libertarian way of thinking about it, because it's not really asking the question, well, do you need marriage at all in the first place? If you don't need marriage at all, then why do you care whether these, you know, people are calling themselves married or legally cohabiting or anything else? Why do you care? And secondly, do we care about the overall marriage culture? Do we care about the system within which men and women encounter one another, choose to form lasting relationships, choose to bring children into being, and the stability with which those children are going to be raised? Do we have any systemic interest in that at all? And this case, along with the Lawrence case and, you know, the Windsor case and now a whole series of things, these things are all saying, no, we have no social interest in the social structure of child rearing and bringing forth the next generation. That's all private, right? And I think that that's a big mistake.
What did the judge actually... He kind of threaded the needle here a little bit. He didn't legalize polygamy. In
yes.
fact, I think part of the statute against bigamy, I mean, if bigamy is still illegal, then polygamy certainly has to still be illegal, still stands. So what exactly did he do?
Well, that's interesting. You know, I haven't read the whole 91-page opinion, but here's what it appears that he did. It appears that there was a statute in Utah saying that that this type of cohabitation, multiple partner cohabitation, was illegal. And the obvious purpose of that was, in fact, to wipe out any remnants of the polygamous culture that had been part of Utah's heritage prior to statehood. So obviously the two things are related. What they're saying is, since this case wasn't literally and legally about whether they were married or not, or whether they could call themselves married or anything else, then the statute had to go away. And gee, we're not taking any position on whether polygamy itself might be legalized, or whether the state, you know, might someday down the road, you know, issue marriage licenses for multiple parties. So what they're saying in this, if I remember correctly, what the judge said about bigamy is that the bigamy statute has some clause as part of it that has to do with defrauding somebody. You know, so in other words, you take on you've got a wife in Salt Lake City and you've got a wife in Provo, you've got a wife in Texas or something, you know, and you're deceiving both of them. You know, that's clearly illegal, right? That's clearly bigamous. So it's not clear where this leaves things. At least it's not as far as I can see. It seems like the door is wide open for the next step, which is because you can't discriminate against these people because they are, for religious reasons, practicing this type of lifestyle. Now, how you're going to stop Muslim-style polygamy, I don't know. I don't think you can, right? So if you're going to allow sister wives or Marin County, you know, hippie love fest type of polygamy, I don't know how you're going to stop Muslim-style polygamy. if they're all inspired by some kind of religious conviction, well, there you go, you know. So that kind of religion is being respected, but the kind of religion that says, we disapprove of homosexual activity, that kind of religion is not being respected. So there are a number of contradictions moving through our law at this time.
So in the case of Cody Brown, he's got one legal wife and then three other cohabitants that he refers to as wives for religious purposes, 13 kids and counting from the four women. But it strikes me that if there's ever any domestic trouble, and those things do happen, even among the most virtuous, if you're one of those cohabiting wives with quotation marks around you, with a couple kids in tow, you really don't have a lot of legal claim upon Cody. You're just a live-in lover at this point. If he wants to kick you out, he can do that, can't he? And the kids.
Well, that's right. And that will be the basis of an equality argument, I would guess. I would guess that would be one of the next steps, to say that it's not fair to leave that woman defenseless, and so therefore we need to legalize polygamy to recognize the reality of the relationship that she's in. You know, I'm guessing that that'll be the next kind of move. And what nobody seems to want to pay attention to, Todd, is Cody Brown right now appears to be harmless because there, he and a handful of other people practice this kind of polygamy. No one wants to ask the question: what if any man anywhere, any time could choose to be polygamous for any reason that they want to? What would that do to the whole society? Just like nobody ever asked the question, what would divorce on demand do to the whole society? Never mind that you've got a 5% divorce rate, and we could do something to make it cheaper for those 5% people to get divorced by instituting no fault. If we move to a systemic statement that there's no presumption that marriage is permanent, what will that do to the whole marriage institution? Nobody wanted to take responsibility for asking that question, and now we've got the exact same thing going here. Nobody wants to ask, what happens if anybody can be polygamous anytime that they want to, and you have a full-on polygamous society? Well, what happens in those societies typically, and I challenge anybody to show me a society that contradicts this, is that the rich men have more than their share of wives. They have multiple wives, and guys of modest means are kind of scrambling around looking for somebody to marry. And so the systemic pressure in those society is, number one, to drive the men out of society, to drive young, find some place for young men to go. So Mormon culture, you'll find the teenage boys being driven off the ranch, you know, kind of a thing. And you'll also find pressure for girls to get married younger and younger. That's the way the gap is filled, is through younger and younger marriages. And you also find more possessiveness of women. You don't find a lot of choices among women. Women become prized, and they're prized by those who are wealthy enough to afford multiple wives. And it doesn't end up being more free for women. It ends up being less free for women. And I challenge anybody to show me a society that is a serious counterexample to that. And, where you've got widespread, society-wide acceptance of polygamy, where you don't end up with those types of effects. And so, you know, we're moving on the basis of individual rights and individual freedom. We're moving to a system that is going to be less equal and less free, and certainly less equality between men and women. So I think this is a dark day for anything that would have ever called itself feminism or freedom.
One other question for you, because what you're doing there, Jennifer, is you're just thinking this through to where it ends. It's not a slippery slope argument. You're just saying this is where this goes, right?
Right.
That's what
right.
you're doing there. Are there others with less than noble motives here when it comes to marriage, thinking this through like you, saying, you know, marriage needs to go, and the way we do that is to define it out of existence by defining it as anything we want it to be, and they're applauding the headline we're reading in the Salt Lake City Tribune.
Well, I'm always hesitant to comment on other people's motives because you don't know for sure what people are thinking. But it is true that some of the people that are opposed to lifelong monogamous man-woman marriage are applauding this as one more stage in the battle that they have seen for themselves. What I would challenge those people to do, though, is to really think it through. It's not when you have no marriage left, when what you have left is a marriage institution that isn't an institution, what do you actually have left? And I think what you end up with is the law of the strongest. And I think this is the case that shows it the most clearly. Polygamous societies are not egalitarian societies. And so I think they're thinking it through up to a point. But they're not thinking it all the way to the end and asking what happens when you don't have a marriage institution. What happens to women? What happens to children? What happens to your idea of equality? What happens to your idea of personal liberty, personal freedom, when women become something that is that they're so valued that they have to be controlled because rich men want a lot of women? You know, that's the dynamic that is being set into motion here that nobody really wants to take responsibility for.
Finally, with about 30 seconds, is there a relationship between the legalization of same-sex marriage most recently and increasingly and polygamy?
Well, this is the slippery slope that we were laughed at about, right? And in other words, people have been saying for some time that the logic used to justify genderless marriage will be used to justify plural marriage, or can be used. And we, you know, in debates, we've continually asked people, explain to me the principled reason by which you can allow genderless marriage and at the same time disallow plural marriage. And the response typically is to poo-poo us and to say that'll never happen and, you know, go away and stop being hysterical. Well, here it is. About less than a year after the Windsor case, we have this kind of ruling. And remember Justice Scalia was concerned about this. Rick Santorum was concerned about this. And, the response of the lifestyle left and the hedonist right, both, their response was to just poo-poo it. Well, you know, sad to say, I wish they were wrong. I wish the people on our side who talk like this turned out to be wrong, but they're not wrong. That's the problem.
Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. You'll find a link to the Ruth Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Jennifer, thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
When we come back, Pastor Tom Baker is going to join us. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson in Luke chapter 2. You know the story, the birth of Jesus. That'll take us into Hour 2 of Issues, etc. We talk about Daniel the prophet and the three young men remembered by the church tomorrow. Dr. Andrew Steinman will be our guest.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
When was Jesus born? When did he die and rise from the grave? And what does the timing of these events have to do with Christian theology and practice for the last 2,000 years? The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for December is titled, When Was Jesus Really Born? It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or you can check out When Was Jesus Really Born at issuesetc.org. The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month, When Was Jesus Really Born?
Are you concerned about weight gain during the holidays? Work out this winter at Arch Fitness of Cottage Hills, Illinois. Arch Fitness offers adult boot camps on weekday evenings and on weekday and Saturday mornings. For more information, check out the Facebook fan page for Arch Fitness or call Kevin Reisick at 618-670-6952. Arch Fitness is located at 127 West MacArthur Drive in Cottage Hills, Illinois. Win the war against winter weight. Arch Fitness of Cottage Hills, Illinois.